Hi, this is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
Thank you. Well, like all half-decent stories, this one's going to start with a main character who is full of wounds and scars, but also hopes and desires, and who also has a task ahead of them. And my task today is to delve, well, perhaps to invite you all to dive a little bit more deeply into storytelling in medicine, some of its utility and its relevance in medicine. But before I do that, I'd like to pluck you out of this gentle, innocent world of pediatrics and drag you down into my world, which is an inner city emergency department. And I'd like to take you through the doors of that department on a shift not all that long ago. And we'll go through those open doors and we'll see in front of us these like clusters of police. They've all got tasers and guns on their belts. There's noise, there's screaming, there's some questionable body fluid on the floor, there are unmentionable smells, there is a lot going on, there's a whole line of cubicles of patients who are under the Mental Health Act for their methamphetamine-induced psychosis. And the bat phone goes off, so paramedics are bringing in a priority one case. As a youngish chap, actually, in cardiac arrest, he's 30 years old, he's had a bit of downtime. Anyway, the paramedics scream in with this man, and the story is exactly that. He's a 30-year-old man. He's a known drug abuser. He was found next to a stolen motorbike, and he's been down for some time. Anyway, we look at him. Yes, he's in his 30s. He's covered in these angry, rageful tattoos. He has track marks like deep red rivers in both antecubital fossae and some fresh. And he's got that sort of asystole, which is pretending to be VF, but it's not really, sort of dressed up, but it ain't going there. And so my team and I, we go in and we start our robotic cycles of ACLS. We're going through, it's all happening as expected, and there's kind of a bit of banter, you know, we're doing a little bit of the kind of disparaging robotic sort of chat amongst the team as we go through the process. And while that's happening, someone comes and taps me on the shoulder, and it's one of the nurses, and she says, "His mother's here. Can you go and speak to her?" And, oh, his mother, you know, that, gosh, that seems incongruent. I said, "That's fine." So I walk the long corridor up to the distressed relative's room. And it's kind of a weird place, this corridor. You're never quite sure what you're going to find on the other end. And I go in and I open the door, and there's this little lady. She's beautifully dressed. She's kind of small. She's got lovely coiffed hair. She's Italian. And she's sitting there and she puts down, she's brought along this suitcase. And it's one of those old-fashioned suitcases, you know, that doesn't have wheels. It's all sort of battered, brown, hard suitcases with travel stickers on it. And she says to me, "I heard he'd come into hospital and I thought he might like some of his things." And I know I have to start to tell her the terrible news. She looks up at me with such hope. But hope is obviously no match for an unresuscitatable heart. And I have to tell her that things are terribly grim. And in fact, her son is likely to die. She knows about the drug use. But at that moment when I tell her, she sinks to the floor. And I get down there with her and she hugs me and she starts to sort of almost roll on the floor. It's like grief personified rolling on the floor. And she starts to tell me these stories about her son. And they just come out of the blue. She tells me about when he was a child and he used to ride a bike and he had this hair which would flow out behind him. He loved to do maths and he would write in very small writing in the margins. And she told me these stories. But anyway, I needed to bring her to see her son. So together we walked back down to where the resuscitation was still happening. And by that time, he had died. And I brought her through to see her son. And she went over to him and she wanted to warm up his body. So she was trying to warm him up. And as she was doing that, she told all of the team more stories about her son. And she continued to do that. Afterwards, when we had our sort of debrief and we talked about this case, all of the team members remembered something different. They all took something very different away from that story. And while I'm yammering on for the next short while, I'd like to invite you all to perhaps think about what was the purpose of me telling you that story now in this talk. Why did I tell you that story? Because in the meantime, I'm going to tell you, this is of course our man Will Shakespeare, who was a master rhetorician, an artist of verbal charm. You all know rhetoric is just the way of rearranging words and stories so they become more memorable. And of course, our Will was brilliant. One of the things I want to do is use tricolon. Tricolon is the art of saying things in threes to make them more memorable. I came, I saw, I conquered. Friends, Roman countrymen, life, the universe, and everything. Things are said best in three. So I'm going to tell you three things in this talk. Well, I'm not going to tell you. I don't like that. We're going to discuss it, the conversation. Please join in the conversation. But one is, why do we tell stories in medicine? What is their purpose? The second is, how can we tell stories? How can we tell stories better? And the third is to just look at some of the pitfalls in storytelling in medicine. So I'm going to have a guess, because I can't ask you directly, what you might have taken away from that original story that I just told you. You might have, I don't know, identified a little bit more with me, felt sorry for me. Maybe you thought, ew, telling horrible, you know, telling banter while someone's in cardiac arrest, you might dislike me. But you probably have some sort of relationship with me now that you didn't have before. You may have identified very strongly with the story, the patient, the mother, or you may have reflected on something of your own experience. You may have simply alighted on a single detail that might have stuck with you. So I want to talk about why and the purpose of telling stories in medicine. Now, you all have heard by now, it's the current zeitgeist, isn't it? You've got to tell a story. Start all your talks with a story, preferably a personal one. And you all will know, you will have been told, you will have read, that stories engender empathy. We are able to step into somebody else's shoes and see the world through their eyes and have an emotional bond with them. That's what empathy is. It's walking in their shoes, understanding the world in an emotional way from somebody else's point of view. This, of course, is the wonderful Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird and his immortal line, "You can only ever understand another man when you consider things from his point of view, when you climb into his skin and walk around a while." It is true. That is what we do with stories. We see them through somebody else's eyes. And very frequently, as Marion beautifully put, we are listening to stories of people who are outside our own cultural experience, people of other genders, of people of colour, oppressed people. We can see how the world reacts to them through the act of storytelling. And it is true, the new truth, that we have never needed empathy more than we do now, as you can feel it slipping away from our global grasp. I think that empathy is now just as revolutionary as truth in this in our current global situation. Storytelling is a gift. It's a personal gift. You open yourself up to a certain vulnerability when you tell a story, particularly when you tell a story of your own. It has a great power in relationships. I've got a friend who works in prisons, and he said there's this real hierarchy of prisoners. There's up here is the murderers, and down here are the paedophiles. But up here are the storytellers. These guys hold the greatest power of all. They are the ones who capture the hearts of other prisoners. So it's an act of gift giving to give of a story, and that's a powerful thing to do. Stories help with the complexity of the world. This, of course, is our great Sir William Osler, who said, the good physician treats the patient. No, he treats the disease. I got that quite wrong. The good physician treats the disease, but the great physician treats the patient with the disease, meaning, of course, that it's the individual human narrative that gives you ability to really, truly treat a patient. Medicine is unfathomably complex. I think there's a real difference, though. Sometimes pediatric medicine is not quite as complex. Once you start getting a whole lifetime of human experience and human narrative, it totally changes it. But medicine does not respect textbooks. It respects the individual. There are lots of different ways we tell stories in medicine. We tell them like we've done today. We tell clinical cases. We write. We put them into research papers. We write blogs. We write social media posts. We write stories on Twitter. But we also, when you're telling a clinical case, you are telling a story. And as you know from your learning that medicine is really only comprehensible when it's put into the individual story. It doesn't have much traction just as lists. This is my favourite. Stories have enormous mnemonic power. There's this great book, I don't know if you've read it, which is called Moonwalking with Einstein by Joshua Foer. And the very start of this book, he tells the story of Simonides. Simonides is a 5th century poet. And he was about to give this recitation to a huge building full of probably men, they're all men, of course. And he steps out for a moment, I don't know, probably go to the toilet or something, and the entire building collapses. It crushes everybody. It kills everybody inside this building. The distressed relatives come. They want to identify their relatives, pull them out, but the corpses are mangled. Nobody is recognizable, and it just builds this hysteria. And what Simonides does is quite remarkable. He seals off his senses to the outside world. He reverses time in his mind and he goes back through the preceding dinner and he walks along and he takes this temporal, he finds the temporal story of who was talking to whom, what they said during the evening. And by doing that, this is the apocryphal story of how the art of memory began. We know it now, of course, as the memory palace, where things told in stories have extraordinary power to allow us in our minds to remember things. And of course, it's something that's greatly used by people in dens of iniquity and gambling dens, card counters. That's how they count their cards. They put them into a story. And by putting things into story, we can remember things which we could not have in our working memory otherwise. So you'll often hear the memory palace. That's what the memory palace is. Putting visual things into little places in a story. But even more so, and my absolute favourite, of course, this painting is by Turner of Odysseus returning. The great epic poets, they knew how to tell a story, but they not only told a story, they told it in rhyme, in rhythm, in poetry, in prosody. So that not only, because they had to rely on people remembering their stories, that was the only way information was passed down. People had to remember huge tracts of information and they did it through storytelling, but they did it in a beautiful, rhythmic way. We do this as natural as humans. When we start to speak passionately, we want people to remember things, we start talking in rhythms and I'm talking in iams, iambic meter. That's what iambic meter is. Of course, the Odyssey, Homer's, all his poetry was written in, just as an aside, this is like a footnote, I'll just speak, footnote one, he wrote his poetry in dactylic hexameters, and the dactyl meter is really cool because it's like the finger, it's long, short, short, long, short, short, 7 of them. That's totally irrelevant to absolutely anything and you don't have to remember that. But it's extremely cool. Our brains do crazy things with stories, but neurobiologically, weird things. We are psychologically wired to want to hear and to tell stories. If great stories, for example, if people are put into functional MRIs while they're hearing or even reading a really well put together story, parts of their brain will light up. Like, for example, they've done people reading a beautiful story about a ballet described beautifully, and the parts of the brain light up the motor cortex completely lights up, the auditory cortex lights up, like you're doing it. You are able to actually put people, your brain actually can sometimes not tell the difference between reading a really well-written story and doing the thing, which I find incredibly cool. So I wanted to just take a few moments to talk about the how of storytelling. You're all told to tell a story. How do you do it? I mean, most of it you are just your natural storytellers. We all are as humans. But there's a couple of little things that go into writing or telling a story. Stories only need three things. They need a main character. We need a human in there. We need the human because that's all we care about. All we care about is what happens to other humans. It's just how we are. We need conflict. We need tension. So we need this is about the character having agency on the story and the agency of the story to change the character, and we want the character to change. That's it. That's the story arc. That's all you need. And when you think about every story that you've ever heard, they've all got somehow those three things. Otherwise, they're not a very good story. But I guess I've spent the last 6 years of my life, as well as working doing all the like normal human things, like in this darkened room with this ravenous computer, writing a book. And I learned a lot about storytelling. So I just wanted to share just a couple of the other points about telling a story that really make a story richer and hopefully is able to do all those things I just spoke about. And I would say the most important thing is the detail, the tiniest little details. It's odd, the magnificent, wonderful details. We're not really sure why, but it seems to just signal this common humanity. We all understand. It's like the universal, finding the universal in the local, finding what we all understand in just tiny details. And even more than that, the sensory details. Because it is through the senses, of course, that we experience the world. That's how we gather the world to us and put it into our brain, through our thalamus that goes up there into our brain. And that's how we understand the world. And if you can experience that sensuous, you know, I don't know, just sensory, let's stay with sensory. If we can experience that the same as the person we're hearing about, it's a very powerful connector. But I do want to talk about a couple of pitfalls and problems with storytelling, particularly in medicine. And I want to take a reverse up. Oh, God, I reversed so much I went forward. There's a time warp there. And what I want to, when we're talking about the why are you telling a story in medicine, is to think about your motivation for telling a story. You all know that when you're storytelling in medicine, there's the issue of confidentiality. Patients must never be able to be identified. That goes without saying. What I want to talk about is something deeper. And if you are going to tell a story about a patient, you are appropriating another person's story. It's all fine and good for novelists to appropriate. We're snatch and grabbers. That's our job. But in medicine, we have a very different role, and you are appropriating another person's story. And I think you need to ask yourself, why am I using that another person, a patient's story? Because I know that you will have seen a lot of times that you will have been made to feel uncomfortable about hearing patient stories. And particularly on something like Twitter and those flashy, I mean, I'm a Twitter lover, but it has enormous problems with telling patient stories. Often they're told for entertainment, aren't they? We want to laugh at somebody else's story. That's kind of funny. So these are the motivations you need to think of. Often we see people trying to boost to their own ego, this narcissism. Look at me, look what I've done with that patient. Or people trying to engender sympathy. There's nothing worse than someone sitting there criticising, and I don't mean to be. I just feel very strongly about thinking about your own motivations if you are going to tell a patient story, and just using them wisely with great judgment and with great care, holding people's hearts gently. My other unpopular opinion is I'm not a big fan of the whole cookie cutter presentation. You know, it's got to be, you've got to conform to a certain way or storytelling in a certain way. I've probably just completely being completely hypocritical here, because I've just done the old TED talk here. But don't feel that that's the only way to tell a story. The stories have great power in their uniqueness, their authenticity, and that comes from being individual and telling it however you damn please. In fact, the more heartfelt, the more authentic you are, the better the story. I suspect I'm coming up to time. There's no little timer. This is great. I could go final thoughts the next 20 minutes. No. But I suspect I'm coming up to my time, so I will just stop it there. Great stories reverberate way beyond the telling of them. You are all an audience of amazing, extraordinary, smart, altruistic, incredible people, and telling stories is part of your canon. It's part of your abilities. It's part of the wonder and the magic of connecting. It signals human connectivity. It raises up. It makes us the big global village once we start telling stories and hearing stories of others. So I would just, recommend, tell you all, whatever, be creative, be inspired, be you, be unique, and enjoy the magic of storytelling. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you.
Please stay, because there might be some questions. First, we'll hear from Grace. We'll see what's happening on Twitter, if there are any questions. And can I just say, if you do have a question, if you come to the mic, we'll take a couple.
So firstly, I think we'll all remember about dactylic pentameter. Thank you so much for sharing your own story, reminding us about how we need to hold hearts carefully and be wise in our words. And I'm going to wrap up with three comments. Mel Rule quoted you, "Humans are psychologically wired to hear stories, and we retain memory better if told as a story." Casey Parker shared, "Storytelling and empathy is as revolutionary as truth in our current world." And Jude Alford summed up, "Michelle Johnson, Shakespeare, and Robin's pathological basis of disease, all masters of the tricolon."
Thank you.
So in terms of questions, how do you find that you use storytelling in your day-to-day practice with patients in the hospital?
I think I've... It's two ways, and obviously a two-way street. I have learned, of course, trying to learn how to write stories and write novels. I've learned to be a much better listener. It's funny how that theme keeps coming up again, again, and again. And listening with intent, listening with respect, and allowing people to tell their own stories. And that is, you empower people inordinately when you let them tell their own story. And I find that very powerful in work. And both our wonderful two previous speakers have said exactly the same. And it's really interesting that the storytelling, I'm not much of an oral story. I still find it hard to get up and speak. I'm much better in writing. I can edit it. I've got no edit. Where's my edit capacity here? But because I've got like my 15 seconds of celebrity and fame, having published a novel, I've been asked quite a lot to speak on radio and even do regular radio sessions. And every time people just want to say, just tell us some stories. Tell us some stories about what it's being like in ED. Go on, tell us some stories. You know, I'm sure they all want the naked gardening or something, you know, things where they ought not to be. And I find I have retracted more and more from that. I feel more and more uncomfortable. I don't And I think I was trying to put that across. I don't know. I don't feel telling other patients stories. I can't find my own motivation. Well, maybe I'm much stricter about my own motivation, and I feel very uncomfortable using other people's stories. I mean, of course, I use writing a novel. I've used every experience I've ever had in my vastly long life thus far. But they're all sort of put into a sausage machine, you know, and you just squeeze it out and you get it. It's totally unrecognizable when it comes out the other end.
I think it's great that you've married together your experiences and your interest in literature with the work that you do day to day. So thank you so much for sharing your stories, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. You know what I love, Michelle? I love this idea. I love this idea that reading about something, the brain can experience as if it is happening. I'm looking for a really great book about working out at the gym.
Oh.
So there's a Hopi proverb that says that those who tell the story rule the world, and our speakers today certainly have ruled our morning session. So I would like to thank Mariam, Michelle, and Margie. Could you give them a round of applause?